The natural processes of a healthy forest will, by definition, be somewhat different from the processes that take place in a forest where a fire has burned through. That's our assumption, anyway. Researchers at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, gotta love the address, on Cyclotron Road in Berkeley, California, used their brains and computers on the issue of how the natural processes differ after fire. They focused on water and how water moves differently on the landscape after a fire. They described some of the findings as counterintuitive. Let's visit with Erica Woodburn, who works in the Energy Geosciences Division at Lawrence Berkeley Lab. She's the co-author of the research paper. Thank you for joining us, Erica.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
So what were you looking for? What was the starting point of the research?
Yeah, I think as you say, wildfires are something on the mind of a lot of Californians and people living in Western U.S. in general. So one thing we're really interested in as hydrologists is how the dynamics of post-wildfire conditions, most notably, obviously, the changes to large-scale decreases in forest area might impact water storage and availability for people living in the western U.S.
Was there some sense of urgency to the work? You kind of referenced that, but given climate change and the generally lengthening fire season, it seems like there's a greater interest in this sort of research.
Yeah, definitely. I think, the occurrence of wildfires increasing and also the scale of wildfires increasing definitely is on the mind of a lot of researchers working in wildfire conditions and hydrology. So there was some sense of urgency. And for this study specifically, we had some funding to look at climate extremes in the western U.S. and the role that, the impact of dry, prolonged periods of drought and some of these more intense water years have on water storage. So it was kind of a combined effort thinking about climate extremes, climate change, and also the more frequent occurrence of wildfires.
So how did you choose a watershed to study, and what made the one you chose what you thought would be a good representative example?
Right. So we modeled the Cosumnes watershed, which is just outside of Sacramento, and it's pretty representative, I'd say, of most watersheds in Northern California and many actually across the state, in that it spans the Sierra Nevadas and the Central Valley, which is really important to combine into one model because you get the dynamics between the high elevation snowpack and the Central Valley, where a lot of the groundwater pumping is occurring. This watershed is also pretty representative in that, it's mixed land use types, so covers a large area of Sacramento and also obviously a high portion of the forested region in the Sierras. So we wanted to incorporate both those kind of end member regions of most of these watersheds within the model to try to understand how the two interact and how water partitions across that interface.
I didn't realize how good the Cosumnes was for this. The fact that it does span the Sierra and the valley floor gives you sort of an ideal watershed, I would think.
It is indeed ideal in that way. Another kind of important thing to mention is it's actually pretty unique in that it's one of the main rivers, one of the last rivers in the state without a major dam. And that's just a function of the elevation I think some of the cost-benefit analysis that people must have done decided to not put a major dam there. So what that gave us was kind of an opportunity to understand natural flows in the face of climate change, whereas, looking at water flows in some of these largely regulated rivers within the state will be obviously impacted by kind of the management decisions that those dam regulators choose.
This is the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Erica Woodburn in the Lawrence Berkeley Lab, who's the co-author of a research paper on watershed dynamics following wildfires. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. Questions, comments, welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Now, you did computer modeling on this. So before you go and run models in a computer, how extensive the process of getting data into the computer?
It's quite an undertaking. So these types of models are pretty computationally expensive. They require a lot of data. So at Berkeley Lab, we have a Department of Energy supercomputing facility. And so this model is actually constructed with many different layers of high-resolution data. And we're trying to do this in high resolution because, as we talked about earlier, we're trying to understand things like climate extremes in the western U.S. And along with climate extremes are things like sharp wetting fronts that you want to capture within the model. So having your grid size of that model be fairly small, on the order of tens to hundreds of meters opposed to several thousands of meters, that's really important to try to capture those physics. So there was quite an undertaking to try to capture as much data as possible. So that includes things like geology, land cover type, topography. All those things are sort of available on higher resolutions. But then part of the team did spend quite a bit of time trying to incorporate model parameterization about things like groundwater pumping and irrigation, which are obviously much harder to identify over large areas and are really less publicly available.
Did you find, as you were getting to the process of inputting the data, Erica, that you needed more, that there were some parts of the Cosumnes River watershed that you needed more information on?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, obviously where there are more people, there is more data. So that's an issue that we ran into. In 2014, California passed the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, and that's going to enforce a lot more of these mandates around things like groundwater pumping and irrigation practices. So hopefully in the future, moving forward, I think that'll help in these types of studies to try to incorporate more data.
So with the computing power you had, and I love another acronym here, NERSC, within the Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory, we don't need to get into what the acronym stands for, had the computers available for that. With that much computer power, how many different models could you run, and how long did it take?
Yes, so NERSC is the acronym for National Energy Resource Scientific Computing Center. And as I said, that's a DOE, Department of Energy supercomputing facility at LB&L in Berkeley here. And so we're really fortunate to have this resource available to us to run our model. As I said, I think, the incorporation of some of this higher resolution data is really important to study things like climate extremes and wildfires. But in doing so and adding more data and higher resolutions, it really requires kind of cutting up this large model into many pieces and running it in a parallel computing environment, such as the one on hosted at NERSC. So some of these simulations, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but on the order of, maybe a year of simulation time could take up to a week of actual time, so like wall clock time. It's super expensive in terms of energy and also, our time as well. But if we were doing that without a supercomputer, if we were just doing it on our own laptops, then it would really be infeasible to run. You might be running it for several years and never going to answer.
Right. So, it would almost happen in real time or slower.
Work. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's really important for this study to have supercomputers.
So, Erica, in the fire that you modeled, and again, nobody actually set a fire in the Cosumnes River watershed. I just want to talk about that too. But in the modeling, then, did you stick with one kind of fire, one level of tree destruction and soil heating, that sort of thing?
Yeah, what we did is, as you say, we didn't want to go out and set a fire or anything. We basically looked at historic occurrences of wildfires in the region, and one really good resource. Versus the CAL FIRE database, so it's all publicly available online. So what we did was simulated present-day conditions where the land cover is unaltered by wildfires as it is today, or generally unaltered by wildfires. And then another simulation where we basically took out all the trees and replaced those regions within the model with a more barren soil representative of some of these burn scar areas based on where those wildfires have occurred in the past. And so we were able to to compare the two sets of simulations as kind of like a extreme what if we saw the occurrence of all of these and how does the water cycle essentially change because of those changes to the landscape.
Erica Woodburn, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange at Lawrence Berkeley Lab, talking about work that she and colleagues did looking at watersheds after wildfires to see how the water responded, what the hydrological processes were after wildfire. Your questions, comments, welcome at 800-838-3760 and jx at jeffnet.org. So once the computer models were done running, did something leap out of all that data toward you?
It did. So obviously there's a lot of data processing and analysis, which comes out of running these large models and then looking at the large data set that it generates. But one of the main findings was that you see these changes to seasonal snowpack. That's something that's somewhat, you know, fairly well understood. You change the landscape, you remove the trees, you're essentially going to have more snow accumulation, and that's going to change things like summer runoff. But what we wanted to look at is how does this basically upscale when you do it at a watershed scale, and where do you see changes to things like groundwater storage? And we were pretty surprised to see things like an increase in the overall groundwater storage that was significant enough to probably impact things like agricultural practices. Another kind of interesting thing was that we saw, in general, while evapotranspiration decreased, and evapotranspiration just being the sum of evaporation and transpiration, which is the loss of water through trees, we generally expected that to decrease within the model because we had less trees. We actually saw an increase in some regions, which was pretty surprising to us, and I guess pretty counterintuitive to most. And that's, again, linked back to our other finding of increased groundwater storage throughout the basin after these wildfires. So it's kind of this propagating impact, I would say, changing the landscape following the wildfires.
Can you get to the why? For example, is there greater groundwater storage because there are fewer trees taking the water up?
I think it's the model showed was it's a combination of multiple things. So in general, yes, the trees are not there, so you're removing less through evapotranspiration. But it's also a function, as I said, of the snowpack, of the timing of when the water is released from the melting snow. And then I think what was really interesting to see was that a lot of the groundwater flow pathways changed because we were changing something at the land surface. So the amount and where groundwater moved was also modified given these post-wildfire conditions. So that also impacts how much storage you get in the end of your water year.
Do small changes appear to be magnified in these models? I mean, does taking out a few trees make a big difference over the course of an acre, for example, in how water moves?
That's a good question. That's something we could look at in the model. I can't give you an exact answer of, we didn't look at that specifically, but I will say that definitely you see some non-linear impacts. So we removed 20% of the landscape that was forested. We don't necessarily see 20% increase in groundwater storage or something like that. So in some areas it might be much higher, and in some areas it might be less high. So part of what the model showed is that some of those nonlinear impacts are related to things such as the geology type of the region, the steepness of the surrounding topography, and we couldn't relate it to any single one parameter of the model. And that kind of alludes to the fact of the need to run these types of models to try to identify regions that are really going to be most susceptible to climate change.
Once you get the models back, once the supercomputing part of the process is over, did you and your colleague have to look at the reams of data yourselves by hand, or were they pretty well presented graphically to you?
No, we do most of the post-processing ourselves. If only everything could come back,
right.
Just packaged nicely, that would help us so much. But we have a great team that worked on this project. Faji Main is a postdoc who did most of the processing of the data. And really, that's just writing her own source code and, formatting that in ways that has been graphically easy to put into other codes to look at and make prefigures.
So, Erica, where do you go from here? I mean, what can be found here to be useful to land managers, fire managers, anybody who might be interested in what you've come up with here?
I think there's definitely implications from this type of study. And, I think I alluded to the fact earlier that there is some uncertainty, obviously, with all the different layers of data. So definitely we would be proponents of, doing more studies like this in the future. But I think it just highlights and sheds a light on the fact that these water systems are really complex, and sometimes you see counterintuitive processes occurring, or you change one thing and you get unexpected results in another way. It also highlights the fact that these systems are really connected, and looking at the system holistically, especially from a water management perspective, I think is really important moving forward with climate change and possibly more droughts and more wildfires in the future.
All right. More research obviously to come, and more models to run in the future perhaps. But this piece is called Watershed Dynamics Following Wildfires, Nonlinear Feedbacks and Implications on Hydrologic Responses. It's published in the journal Hydrological Processes. Faji Maina, that Erica Woodburn mentioned, was the lead author on this. Erica Woodburn, the other author, and she joins us from the Lawrence Berkeley Labs, or works at the Lawrence Berkeley Labs in Berkeley in the Energy Geosciences Division. Erica, thanks for joining us today to describe what you did.
Certainly, it was my pleasure. Thank you for having me on the show.
Good to have you.